Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip.
And we have another great show ahead for you today. We're going to talk about some pretty fun topics, like stuff that, you know, we've been talking about for a while. But, you know, maybe we're going to get into a little more detail on some of them, which is cool.
Before we do, I do want to make sure that we shout out our sponsor. Thank you to Vertex for sponsoring this episode and almost 2 years now of partnership with the Vertex. If you are looking for an enterprise or SMB tax solution, look no further than Vertex. Check them out online at vertexcloud.com. I think that's right. I should check that. That's a good thing to know before you go shouting out. That's correct. Vertexcloud.com. Before you go shouting out a sponsor. And we don't want you to miss any episodes of Future Commerce. So the best way to do that is to like and subscribe. And you can do that at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or like pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. And if you could, turn on a new generation. Ooh. A new generation of podcast listener. Ooh. Get your mom and dad and your kids to listen to the show. Our friend, our listener friend, Pat McLean, who he did that on his road trip here this summer. He's a big fan of the show, and he had his kids listening for 7 hours in the car, and now they hate our guts. So that's pretty fun.
That's the opposite. Thanks, Pat, for doing that.
Thanks, Pat, for listening. And don't bludgeon your family with the show, but you share it. It's family friendly. This is good fun. And we are talking about generational themes today.
Yeah.
Which ties in.
And our episodes are getting shorter. I don't know if you've all noticed that, but we've been making it a little easier for you to turn on an episode and listen to it all the way through, and your kids won't die.
We should incorporate some like Sesame Street style songs into our show, where it's like, we're going to teach you about retail, kids. You ready?
Every time we say a certain word, we should have some cool like sound effect play.
Like a jingle. Okay. So,
well,
you wrote a blog, and it got the gears turning, and it's a forthcoming blog, as are all of our content pieces. Give us a little bit of a tidbit on what that's all about, because I love the idea.
This is an interesting one. About a month ago marked the second anniversary of my dad's passing, which got me thinking about my dad. And I'm also thinking about retail all the time. And one of my favorite stories in the history of retail, like really, truly, is a relationship that my dad developed, or someone developed with my dad. He was a huge fan he loved to cook, and he loved to get quality ingredients, and he loved to buy wine. He was really into finding wines. He loved what's termed value wine in the industry. He loved finding good wine for a good deal that was interesting and went really well with his meal. He loved going to grocery stores and Costco and, you know, talking to the wine stewards at those places. And in particular, he loved to go to Costco and talk with the wine stewards there. Really developed an interesting relationship with the wine stewards at one Costco in particular. And what I loved about this was there were two gentlemen at this Costco who really made time for my dad. And like he was a chatter. He loved to talk. And they probably spent more time with him than they maybe should have or allowed for. But I kind of love that. Like they made space, or Costco allowed them to make space, or whatever it was. Like, and so this is the interesting thing. Not only did, you know, my dad really appreciate it, because I think he knew that, you know, they spent a lot more time with him and that they liked talking with him, but I think as they made space for my dad, they really got to love him as well, which was interesting. You don't see that you know, in a retail setting all that often. And it got to the point where...
Yeah, I mean, that's really what this is, right? They work in retail in some way or form, but they develop a personal relationship along the way.
Yeah, and it's awesome. it's not like, you know, them just like, you know, getting, you know, effectively my dad really liking them and going to them just to buy from them. It's the other way around where like a retail front-end retail associate is actually like considers his customer his friend, which is you know, I think that's what clienteling is all about. And like, so they got to the point where like they would be exchanging text, you know, tasting notes and via text message, and they would...
Wow, they were like on a text basis.
Exactly. They're, yeah, this like is, this is like
it got... It's getting serious.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly. And it was actually not just one wine steward from this Costco. It was actually two of them. Or maybe even there was a third one. I don't even know. It got to the point where, like, when my dad passed away, they actually came to his funeral, which is like, that's something that...
Look, yeah, this is the part that blew my mind that you told me, because I have a whole thing about this, but I'll save it until after you're done, because that's something else. I mean,
this is clearly well beyond anything that Costco expects out of their employees. Like, this is people caring about people. This is real community. And, you know, I got to know these guys a little bit. I don't live near this Costco, so I don't get to go there very often. I do pop in occasionally. But for me, you know, growing up, going to Costco, seeing my dad interact with, you know, these guys and, you know, just being part of that whole process. Of course, I'm a huge fan of Costco. Like, there's so many reasons why I'm a fan of Costco. But like, this was, you know, icing on the cake or beyond that. This was like really personal. Deeply meaningful to me that these guys came to his funeral, and you know, and that they were his friend, like his real friends. So to me, now I've got like an insane amount of like fanboyism for Costco, which I'm sure has come out on this show.
If you've listened to the show for any length of time, yes, Brian is a huge fan of Costco.
Sustainable business practices and allowing employees to make space at this level is just...
Right. Yeah, equitable employment, you know, for what could ostensibly be just, you know, cheap labor.
Right.
Right. Skilled, they're hiring skilled people and they're paying them a living wage and they're giving them good benefits and they're being successful doing it. You want to applaud.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. You want to applaud when they do that well.
I definitely applaud Costco. I love Costco. I know people that work there. They love their jobs. It's an unbelievable company. And one that had a profound impact.
So what's the point?
Had a profound impact on my life. And now I shop there all the time. And maybe that's because I've got kids and I have to shop at Costco. But I would be shopping at Costco. I shopped at Costco even before I had kids. So... It's what I think we're going to coin. And this is interesting because there's a lot of words out there around multi-generational, like marketing to multi-generational, customers. And that really just means you need to address all your segments, millennials, Gen Z, and baby boomers, and blah, blah, blah.
How do you tell your story to you know, 60 million Gen Z? I got it. Right.
This is multi-generational commerce. This is multi-generational clienteling, really is what it is, where you're building a brand that has such a profound impact that is truly part of your customers' communities to the point where they're passing that along to their children. That is clienteling. That's peak clienteling.
Okay. Let me, I always have to summarize so my brain understands. What you're saying is that you got a glimpse of something that you think probably exists in the world and that there are people who are doing this really well. Costco might be one of them based on your own experience, that your father's interaction with people and the relationships that he formed how he got to that relationship was through a retail experience, but it was obviously much more than that, right? And you are suggesting that there are probably other instances or examples in the world of great customer service transcending into something deeper that creates a generational relationship with a brand.
Exactly.
And I, when you wrote that blog and I'd read it, I said, oh my gosh, I totally get this. Like, I totally get this because that is, you know, that I have that relationship in many ways. I'm a fan of certain brands and therefore my kids are fans of certain brands, right? And not just because, I mean, they're 7 and 8 and can't make their own choices yet, but because I think that there are, you know, there are some companies who excel at instilling some values and making the right hires and having the right people in the organization that represent that and do that really well. And it's funny because we had talked about this to some degree. I think we touched on it back in January of this year. So if you're listening later on, January of 2019, I had recorded a podcast interview on another show that I'm on called Merchant to Merchant. And we had a brand called Birdwell on there, which you might know them as like a board short brand, Birdwell Beach Britches, which is fun to say. And they had this really interesting discussion about how they've been around for so long, like 60, 70 years, that, you know, and they've been in Venice Beach for so long that they've become sort of this generational outpost where, you know, dad brings in his son and grandpa who all, you know, buy clothes together and they buy board shorts together and they all surf together. And it's this like cultural fixture. So I thought that was a really interesting concept, and we don't have dozens of examples of this. We probably have a handful.
We have one on our show, which was amazing, and that was Michelle Cordero Grant from Lively, who talked about multi-generational shopping trips, which I think is amazing. Like she gets it. She's already building experiences that cater towards this. It's amazing.
Correct. Right. And it's funny because in that regard, you had mentioned on the last episode with Ingrid Millman, who by the way, will be on our show much more frequently. Mention that? We haven't really announced it yet, but you'll be hearing a lot more from her. She'll be contributing a lot more to the show in a very short order. So keep a lookout for that. But something you guys had mentioned on that show was that brands are having to be more community oriented and create communities and foster communities. And what is the most natural community you have? Right? It's
right.
Your family.
Right.
You know, like if you have a close family, and not everybody does, but if your family is close, then you are naturally sharing your best experiences and probably your worst experiences in life with them first. And so it makes perfect sense that if you're having a great experience with a brand like Lively, that you want your family members to take part in that experience too. And if they're putting community at the center of their organization and how they're telling a retail story, and then it makes sense that those communities would be involved, aka like your family community.
I think also a big part of this is that, that personal relationship aspect. And, if we hearken back to the days before Star Court, the malls of the 60s, 70s, and 80s or whatever, as they started to...
Right. Star Court. I get it. Yeah. Because I'm also watching Stranger Things right now. Yes. But yes, carry on. Got it. Yeah.
We had shops in towns with owners who lived in those towns and were part of communities in those towns. And you bought your things from that person who probably had employees in their shop that maybe weren't quite as long-term, although they were, often long-term. And you brought your kids along with you to those stores because you walked into town. And, those relationships lasted for multiple generations. My thinking is employee retention in the retail space right now is something that is a huge problem And if you can figure that problem out, obviously it's a huge problem. If you can figure that problem out, you win. Because right now, and this comes along with the stigma of working in retail. I was just reading an article in the New York Times, which we'll link up in the show notes. And it was someone writing into the Times and said, it was basically, I like working in retail, but I'm ashamed to admit it. And this person had, you know, had been in sort of a high powered job and found themselves due to disruption in their industry, working a retail job and really liking it and really enjoying it and thinking it was awesome. And they got promoted to something to the effect of like some middle management position and they were really excited about it, but they didn't want to tell anyone because to them, they were ashamed to be working in retail. This it just sort of is a great anecdote to where we're at in retail right now. No one wants to admit they work in retail. No one wants to stay in retail when they're working it, unless, you know, you even if they do like it, it's not something that they see as a long-term play. Unless you work for Costco, who has figured it out and does care about their employees and does, you know, invest in them and invest in their careers and build a path for them. But I just feel like this right now to me is, you know, investing in your own employees as much as you invest in your customers is a huge, huge, huge topic that we should be spending more time talking about.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries for every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll. Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes, from recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com.
If you are like a marketer at heart and you've been doing this for a long time, you know that multi-generational marketing is a thing and it's been around for a very long time. But what we're not talking about how brands can appeal to many generations and speak in a voice that a brand, you know, that a generational purchaser will resonate with. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, and by the way, today you can do that just by speaking in certain channels. So, you know, maybe many years ago, if you think about like multi-generational, you know, historic family of brands. I'm talking like CPG really has this nailed, where, you know, you've got the General Mills or of the world. You know, they're going to market healthy stuff to mom. They're going to market, you know, fun stuff to kids. And they're going to market, you know, the quick fix and goes with your coffee on the way out the door to work to dad. And those are like, but that's not what we're really, and Metamucil probably to mom or to grandma. But that's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about like retail experiences. And when we're thinking about retail and not just digital, you know, digital commerce, we're talking about real, true IRL in-store, you know, real life experiences that create relationships. And I think that we have an opportunity to do that if we can revive, if some of the storied brands that we, that come up a lot on the show, especially in fashion or clothing. I think about what some big retailers, obviously like Neiman Marcus or Nordstrom or Macy's or those, you know, they're trying very, very hard to change their story. Macy's literally in that they have, you know, story. they're trying very hard to change that. And I think to attract a different type of a customer. And if you can get, you know, if you can get millennials and Gen Z excited to go to Macy's with mom, maybe that's a maybe that's part of this. I'm trying to nail that we're not talking about just the marketing message.
Right.
It's actually about how we can, you know, foster relationship, which I think is a totally different thing. And something that I think, do you think, let me ask you this, do you think that maybe there was something special about your father?
Well, for sure.
Right. Just, right.
I mean, he was,
you know, he wanted those relationships and he valued those, but some people don't, right? Like there's probably somebody out there listening saying, I don't want that. That's totally okay.
Yeah. I think that's true. Or at least in the way that my dad had it, for sure. Like, you know, I think that not everyone's going to have the same kind of relationship with their, you know, with their retail associate that's, you know, helping them find something that they want. But what I am talking about is community. And I think that you know, if we looked at retail as actually a large part of our communities, think about how much time you spend out at retail locations in your community. It's a lot. It's a lot of time. If we had digital play into that, think about what we could accomplish. People do text message with each other. They do, you know, they use digital in their daily lives and in their communities and in their families. Like, how do you build a strategy that uses technology to play into actual community building? That's, you know, the question. Like, you mentioned digital, you know, not being a part of this. I think it absolutely is. It has to be, because that's how people build community these days. So I think it's part of it, but ultimately it's about real connections. This is more than just Facebook. It's about the deep connections that build our lives up. I think that we've lost that. I think that people are craving that. And if you like, this is why I think Nordstrom actually did really well. I think that they built some of these relationships with some of their retail associates as well, where people would go to the same person to make their purchases for 10 years. And they had a relationship with them. Mm. And that person knew their likes and dislikes and, you know, greeted them as a friend as they came in. I think that Nordstrom has been a long time case study in this, and maybe they drifted away from that at one point. I don't know. I don't know where they're at right now, actually. But yeah.
Well, isn't the challenge there? Like, let's kind of go down a totally a little bunny trail here. I think the challenge is when you're a luxury retailer, which I would categorize Nordstrom as, you know, in that category. Yeah. When you're a luxury retailer, the concept of luxury is changing all the time. And so they have a really interesting challenge there, because one person's concept of luxury is a totally different concept to the next. I remember speaking with, we have Charlie Cole, from Tumi, who will be on the show in a week or two. And that's, I'm really looking forward to that interview. But he had spoken at a conference in 2017 about the concept of luxury changing. And it was like, by 2020, you know, luxury will mean something different. And, because it used to be, you know, nobody can get a Birkin bag. And now, I mean, the real and, you know, Poshmark and, you know, pretty much everything out, like Facebook Marketplace, like, so you'll be able to find what you're looking for somewhere on the internet nowadays. It also used to be you couldn't get a certain type of reservation. Well, now Talk exists, which is also, by the way, both of mine and Brian's new favorite thing. exploretalk.com if you're looking for luxury type, you know, dining experiences. It's a great place, you know, that is not OpenTable to get those reservations. Well, these, like, there's a digital service that exists for everything now that sort of displaces that idea of what luxury used to be, which is basically just, you know, scarcity. Well, you know, there is the idea of luxury now. Sneakers are a form of luxury in that they have some scarcity built into them and they're, you know, unique. But that's not the kind of luxury that, you know, grandma thinks of as luxury. So you have this moving target, I guess, is what I'm trying to get back down to, is that Nordstrom has a different struggle. But Nordstrom probably has some resources to invest to close that gap. Although the Nordstrom here in West Palm Beach closed, it's an interesting challenge that they have. But yes, digital enablement is part of it. But I don't think it's a truly like a uniquely. It's not a marketing challenge, right?
It's a, I don't it's think a it's a marketing challenge,
which is what I'm trying to say.
It's a conversational challenge. I think like an empowerment challenge. Like I think right now we do not empower retail associates enough, and this is starting to change. I mean, what was it like a couple months ago? I saw a story about Half Price Books and how they enabled their associates to be able to curate their assortment, which it's really cool, I think. Giving people more control, giving them more responsibility, not assuming that, you know, hiring good people and then giving them the freedom to be able to actually address their customers in the place that they're in. I think that's what Costco allowed their wine stewards to do is they didn't have complete control of their assortment, although I do think that wine stewards at Costco have some freedom. But ultimately, it was about, you know, the freedom to be able to make space to talk to customers directly. And actually, I think where I ultimately want to, you know, this I see this as it's actually pulling over B2B practices into B2C, because B2B has been nailing this for a long time. Like B2B relationships oftentimes last 20, 30, 40 years. Because you know the suppliers are building relationships and they're dependent on each other. Those relationships are, and I know that there's not as much dependence on retail, but I think that we, you know, giving your retail associates the ability to, you know, provide discounts to loyal customers and give them, you know, the ability to, you know, be more open with what's coming, and like kind of give them insider track as they build those relationships. Those, you know, I think that happens a lot in B2B. It doesn't really happen in retail at all.
It's interesting that there was a story out recently, and I it feels like it was more of a national story, but for some reason, I really only found it over on Star Tribune, which I'm trying to figure out. I don't even know which market this particular paper serves. I'm gonna have to look into this. Minneapolis. I'm duh. Interesting that, you know, they're reporting on Target. Is basically, you know, changing a lot of things, trying to attract, you know, longer term employees. And, you know, part of that is to bolster, you know, programs like emergency childcare, paid family leave, having more full-time workers and having more, you know, beefed up benefits for them, because that's just real life. If you want people who want to stay in a job for a long period of time, you know, that's going to be a little bit more challenging because they have complicated lives and, you know, kids that need to be, you know, sent home from school, and we just have to be okay with that. And
That's actually treating your employees like they're part of your community. Like want to lift them up. You want to be there to support them. If you think you need to treat, if you're treating your employees this way, you know, like without those kinds of benefits, how do you think they're treating your customers? Like, it creates a culture that spirals all the way down to your customer.
Yeah. And there's a lot of discussion in sort of the HR space about companies who are, you know, leading the way on a bunch of on these. I think Target's just one of them. Just trying to find more examples in the retail space of now. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think that your average Target employee is making you know, $90,000 a year.
Right. Well, neither is your average Costco employee. So,
yeah. I mean, your average Costco employee, though, is likely being paid a heck of a lot more than, let's say, those that were at Toys R Us, right? And that is one of those, you know, struggles that we've seen, especially in retail closures, that they, you know, maybe this is just the effect of this idea of late stage capitalism. Have you heard this? It's like a meme at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. So why don't you do a quick explain a fire?
I hate that this is a thing, but it's also like, it is totally a thing. So it's just this idea that late stage capitalism sort of just trends toward cruelty. And I think there's no better example of this than this show that recently came out called the 24-hour $1 million challenge. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen this.
it's a real thing. It's crazy. It's on Netflix. It's called the $1 million game, and contestants stay awake for 24 hours.
Oh, awake.
And then they start the game show.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Right. And, it's called Awake. Yeah. 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 Sorry. So have you seen it?
I haven't watched it. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, this is what we
don't give it any attention. Yeah. Cause this is like, it's just cruel. And by the way, it's funny that over the years we're trending more and more towards, you know, Japanese style game shows, which are just, you know, inherently cruel and exist only, you know, for us to laugh at the contestants and, you know, and how vain their attempts are to actually succeed in the tasks they're given. A good example of this, and it's the one that everybody mentions because it's the first episode of Awake, is, you know, you're awake for 24 hours and now you have to count, you know, 4 million quarters, and you have to be like exact, you know, perfect about it. And it's just the sad thing of,
isn't that basically just, like torture, like sleep deprivation?
Yeah, it is. But they're going to win something, you know, let's say ostensibly they could win $1 million. That could change someone's life for, you know, in some sort of meaningful way, I'm sure. But that is an example of late stage capitalism. It's like these things that just, I think that the, you know, underpaid retail employee is just a good example of late stage capitalism the type of thing that exists in the world that everybody is just kind of like, we will, that's what we're veering towards. The longer that retail brands exist, the more they have to provide benefit to shareholders, the more that they have to provide an increasing, you know, quarter after quarter after quarter, they have to have some sort of a plan to increase, you know, increase the earnings per share to increase. Right. There's an eventuality that leads to, you know, underpaid retail employees.
But it's bad business ultimately. Like it's not a sustainable, it's not a sustainable business. And that's what I think Costco has basically said. Like, we don't see that as sustainable. So we're not going to play that game. Like,
right. You're not going to play the game. And, but being a public company, right? We see a lot of IPOs right now. Being a public company is inherently, you know, it leads to some of the practices that we see that I would call late stage capitalism. Right. And, you know, the memes about what late stage capitalism are kind of funny, but they're so on the nose. It's kind of like, yeah, no, that's real life. Like a good example is what would Stranger Things season 8 be like? And it's, the kids are all grown up and now they're being denied healthcare for the cancer that they developed while they're, you know, in the upside down, right? And that is late stage capitalism because my cynicism is showing, maybe the brands that will, continue to thrive and create multi-generational customer experiences and customer relationships, I should say, not experiences, but relationships are the ones who remain, you know, privately held and not saying that, you know, the Walmarts of the world are perfect or Costco. These brands aren't perfect. These companies aren't perfect, but they're doing a better job of trying to prioritize the human side of employing real people. And in so doing, those people do the things that real humans do, which is seek connection, relationship, and build community.
I think that's a great way to end the show. You know, we need to, as retailers, we need to be finding ways to, I think, give retail associates Wait, to minimize tasks that are more menial by leveraging technology, provide them with opportunities to do things that engage their brains and their, you know, and engage their attention. And I'm not saying it's not work. Work is work, but provide them with things that they can apply themselves into in creative ways that leverage the talents they have. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity for that. So invest in your employees. I guess that's the title of the show.
Yeah. I love it. Thanks for listening. And we want you to lend your voice to the conversation. You can do that at futurecommerce.fm, or you can always reach out to us directly. And we'd love to hear from you. And you can do that. Just email us, Philip with two L's or Brian with an I at futurecommerce.fm. And maybe you have a story idea. Maybe you want to tell us your story. Maybe you would appear on the show. We'd love to have you. We will be at Commerce Next at the end of July. We want to see you. Reach out and let us know. We've got a ton of interviews coming out. We have some folks from some really interesting retail tech that's out there. Someone we met at IRCE named Draper, this like virtual try-on technology.
That.
Really, really cool.
Love that.
And a whole separate cool thing that I didn't even know exists, but it's one of those things you slap your forehead like, of course this exists in the world. But retail in-store compliance and the technologies and AI solutions and machine vision that they employ to make sure that retailers are upholding brand value standards and display standards. I think that's really cool too. So we'll have some folks on the show coming up, and some actual really great brands like Tumi, Samsonite, and some other really cool stuff coming up. Great. That's it. Take it away, Brian. All tell right. us, what do we do?
What do we do? Retail tech moves fast.
And future commerce is moving faster.
All right.
Thanks for listening.